Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
As Reasonable Voices, we believe everything is political and all our problems are due to a lack of education. So we look for our solutions in the arts, finance, and humanities. The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts in a way that encourages all to think for themselves. So the best political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, The Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. Hello, it's Marcello Rolando with our panel today. We're actually going to have a panel discussions today with the group here. You know them all, Michelle Opperman, Daniel L. Garner, and first of all, we're going to hear a little spoken word from our favorite poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins.
I want you to stop and watch me. Stalk me like paparazzi. Take my picture and make lots of copies. I just want your attention, just to get a mention in your tabloid. Slander and libel and lie, but you hide and avoid. Ambush me from bushes, camera button pushes. I can't stand not being annoyed. Be lurking on my lawn when I step out to get my paper. To be on constant watch at my house is what would make me feel safer. Hide, I'll be outside, coffee mug in hand and standing in my robe. Plaster my picture in your paper, print it 100 times in your Times, your Star, your Globe. I just want your attention, for your sponsors to mention me in their advertisement. But you gloss and pass over the fine print, me with your bad eyes squint, and your reading glasses, or you're blind or just can't read and are needing classes. I'm the commercial and you're rewinding, you're just speeding past it. Give me a spot in your 30-second spot. I need to be in your news feed of all that is happening and hot. Make sure you put me in prime time. I want the lime shine when you run it. Expose me in an expose. I want to be interviewed in a personal press junket.
You know, with all the political games going on, especially in Congress and with our health care, with the health care of people all over the nation hanging in the balance, we decided to forego having a single guest today and instead talk politics between our panel of four, Michelle Opperman, Daniel Garner, Bernard Hankins, and Marcello Rolando. The Reasonable Voices in the studio with me today on our panel are technical support, creative catalyst, and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins. Sorry, Bernard. With Michelle Opperman and Daniel Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. I'm your host. Welcome back, Marcello Rolando. And we want to discuss today, the panel's going to be talking about, we've had recent elections, and as we know, New Jersey and in Virginia were probably the ones that were most featured in the media. But there was so much talk about what the parties are supposed to learn, what are the people supposed to learn from these elections. I think one of the things we're supposed to learn is what does social media do and why should we listen to mainstream media? But anyway, I'll throw it out and see what the panel has to say. Bernard, you want to take it off?
Well, as I was deciding to vote or deciding who to vote for, I realized that throughout the month leading up to Election Day, you get all these cards in the mail, like, vote for me, vote for me. So this one woman running for supervisor, she had three separate cards that came through. But when I got online, the other woman running against her, I don't remember getting anything from her. And so recently in my Hip Hop for President project, I did a episode where it was all about how social media and media has changed. So it's not just social media, but it's media, multimedia.
Yes.
And so I had this scene, or, you know, you had this guy with a big, huge camera over his shoulder and big headphones, but then you cut to this girl with a little cell phone. And it's like everybody has the ability to connect now. Yeah. So the question is, why did this woman, she had a website, but she had a website and it was like a paragraph and that was it. This other lady's website was all laid out. She obviously had, I mean, she probably had more money. But to me, the whole point of the Hip Hop for President project was the idea that you don't have to have millions and millions of dollars. If you have an idea and you have a Facebook account and you have Twitter, you can talk to just as many people. But then that means, well, what are you talking about and how good is the ideas that you're talking about?
Content is still king. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I was thinking about the recent election for governor in Virginia, and I was really amazed at how many slander videos for Cuccinelli I saw on YouTube. So, I mean, every time I went to...
What kind of videos?
Well, I mean, I would say they're... Okay, maybe I shouldn't call them that. But basically...
No, I just didn't understand what you said.
Slander.
She did say slander.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
I mean, basically videos that are talking against Ken Cuccinelli, which is... That's perfectly fine. They're basically stating just some of the things he supports or doesn't support, you know. But the way that they're spoken and the way the tone of voice and everything, you can tell that, you know, somebody obviously has an objective behind those videos, you know. And so I saw tons of these videos on YouTube because I always go there to find good music and listen to music. And then I saw one advertisement on the TV for McCall, and I don't really watch TV, but I was around a TV one time, and I saw one.
once upon a time.
I walked by, and there was this television. Okay.
It's a great sight to behold. No, but anyway, I saw this advertisement for McAuliffe, and it was this happy, beautiful video about him and his family and, you know, this, you know, how he wants to take care of Virginia. And, you know, it was a very touching video. But I just thought it was so fascinating how YouTube had been tapped into for the election.
Sure.
And, I mean, perhaps I should have realized this before. Obviously, we had presidential elections and YouTube has existed. But I felt like it was just so... It was almost every video that I looked up.
Sure.
Did I get an ad about, you know, against Ken Cuccinelli? And I just thought that basically what it made me think about was the influence and the power of media, and particularly the media we have in this day and age, and how it can really give you ideas about candidates who I've never even met. You know, it's like I've never even met McAuliffe. I've never even met Ken Cuccinelli. And what I could tell you are the little blips I've got from the YouTube videos before the song I wanted to listen to. You know, so I think that's really was striking to me in this election.
Media, by definition, is social. So what does it mean to call it social media? it seems kind of redundant. The two most important thinkers, in my opinion, of the last 70 years are Marshall McLuhan and the Neil Postman.
I thought you were going to say Elmo.
Well, it's close. Both of which are philosophers of media studies and sort of talks about, you know, they are writing just when the television is being invented. Well, McLuhan, and then Postman is kind of in the 70s writing about amusing ourselves to death and the effects that television has on our brains and the way that we think and interact. Very important thinkers. Heidegger was before the 50s, so he would come in that same group and dare to. But now I'm just being pretentious. Arguably, our social media has made us less social than ever before. Our way of thinking is restricted to 140 characters. We have to be perpetually stimulated, otherwise we're quickly bored. Our ability to retain information has been dramatically affected, but at the same time, we can now get our content out quickly, and we can do a lot of things that we couldn't do in the past. Neil Postman says all technology is a Faustian bargain. You get some good and you get some bad. But the part of that, of amusing ourselves to death, that I find most fascinating, he starts with this kind of examination of when God in the Old Testament, the First Testament, is saying, you know, don't make any graven images. And what Postman points out is that the Jews understood that the quality of a culture is tied to its representative technologies. It's tied to its images. The way that it creates images of itself will have an effect on the quality of the culture. And I think today we have to ask ourselves, how does social media affect the quality of our culture? Does it do it for the good or does it do it for the bad? And if it does it for the bad, then we have to figure out how it does it for the bad when it comes to politics. Arguably, in a world that is more complex than ever before, if our social media is making us less and less able to understand complex material in an increasingly globalized world, then it seems to be sending us in the exact opposite direction of what we need to go.
Well, as the only person over 50 in the room, I am a member of the media, for those who don't know, I am impressed to hear people under 30 acknowledge that there are mixed blessings with the technology. However, as a person over 50 in the room, I am loving what I'm learning to do with the new technology. As the panel knows, they know me well enough that I'm the least technical savvy person in the room, but I do email with my smartphone now and text like crazy. My wife says I text like a teenager. And so I do embrace the technology brings to us. But I've also written and spoken about people walking off of subway platforms and into poles and out into the street and the traffic, and I've seen it where they're glued to these little screens, and to me, that is not connectivity.
Right.
That's not us now being connected to everybody, because what we really are, I believe, from what I observe, is that we are locked into a technology that connects us primarily to the group of people, our social group, if you will, that we already know. We're just back and forth with each other and not reaching out to really see. I don't think you can see the world if all that you stare at is a screen the size of your palm of your hand.
Well, two things. First, you probably have seen this whole recent Louis C.K. He's a comedian.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So, you know, his thing about he doesn't let his children have a cell phone yet because he's like, if you can text somebody from a distance and say mean things, like,
yes,
you never see that human being's face
react.
No, so you don't develop any empathy. But when you're face-to-face with that person, you then have to ask yourself, can I say this to this person and just continue to feel like a human being for that? But, you know, piggybacking on what Daniel said about image, I think it's interesting the idea of image currently is twofold. Because when we talk about media, we are talking about literally images, you know, JPEG, TIFF files, PNGs, all that. But it's also the meaning of how do you uphold your image?
Mm-hmm.
How do you, how does the world perceive you?
Right.
And I think, I mean, I'm a filmmaker, so obviously I'm deep in it.
Sure.
But I think it's interesting that media and multimedia and social media have changed things in the sense that we are watching each other all the time now.
Yeah.
And because of that, it makes things more difficult to be real to a certain degree. Or, if you think about the president, like if you get on doing hip-hop for president, I get on whitehouse.gov to get free footage. And there's hundreds of clips. I mean, there's just a camera on him at all time. And I'm thinking to myself, can this man even go to the bathroom and just be a normal person? No, he has to be a person who is catered towards what happens on the camera. Because if you do something that doesn't look good on camera, you're not going to look. And it's not even your fault. I mean, sometimes just a two-dimensional image just makes things look strange because it's not reality.
Right. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're watching the same thing. I mean, getting back to our original topic, but we can talk about anything here. The elections, the recent elections, 2013 elections, we haven't talked about New Jersey, but in Virginia. And I want to say to everybody, as I try to write about it, the media, social or otherwise, and the technology are used by the good guys and the bad guys, or as some of my associates say, there are no more good guys and bad guys. It's all just the guys. But when you, I think I wrote recently, a young lady asked me years ago what it was like when John Kennedy was assassinated. And when she asked me that question, she was the age I was when he was assassinated, even though this was sometime later. And her biggest question was, what was it like to have the same show, as in TV show, on for 4 days in succession? Now, not everyone knows, but it was the Kennedy assassination that created the CNN concept of constant news. Because for the first time, we had that. I remember Friday, November 22nd, this is apropos, 1963, the assassination happened around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Walter Cronkite broke in, and until the end of business, as in funeral, on Monday, the November 25th, 1963, it was constant news. Now, it was about John Kennedy and the family and the assassination and, of course, the sadness of that. But some people looked at that in media and said, what a great idea. We can do this all the time. The difference is now they just show after show have the same discussions. Right. Yeah. I mean, really. Interrupt me. Go.
That made me think of a lot of things. Yeah. I just remember one time having, it's a long story, I was in the emergency room waiting for somebody, a friend, and it was late at night, and the news program was on, and I, you know, every 30 minutes or an hour would show the same thing. And I just was confused because I thought there must be more that we could see on the television about, you know, some other country or something else, you know, going on in the world, or artists, like, give me something else, you know. And so that, I mean, that's interesting, but I wanted to say something about the elections recently. Yes. And I mentioned McAuliffe and Cuccinelli, but I think what's so interesting is that in neither advertisement for them, mm-hmm. did I hear their voices.
Yeah, well, because it's Madison Avenue. It's done by people like me, and like Bernard, by the way.
Right.
We are hired to create an image on video.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, there's some, I don't do this, but there's some who work for both sides. Doesn't matter, because right. they're there to create. And I try to tell people, if you would just take out, and I want to do a video about this sometime, Bernard, if you build it in front of someone, in other words, there's the person, then you add the voice, then you add the background, then you add the music, then you add, you know, then suddenly you see, oh my God, this has been manufactured.
Right.
And that's where technology is not necessarily the enemy, but people are taken in. If you see it on television or your phone, it must be real, and it is.
And the other thing too is, you know, Bernard has been working on a great project, which he mentioned, called Hip Hop for President. And I think what's, you know, something that I've never really brought up to him, so this will be the first time, but, you know, what's so great about the idea of a, you know, somebody in hip hop for president is the vulnerability of having to free verse and
yes.
having to speak word on the spot, you know, from the top of your dome, so basically from your head. And I think that is something that we don't have the opportunity as much to see anymore, having debates when it comes to elections. You know, it would been great. I would have loved to have gone to a date, you know, in person, no cameras,
mm-hmm.
just people. You know, there's Cuccinelli, there's McAuliffe, and they're talking.
Yes.
And they're having a public forum debate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that honestly would give us a lot of a better perspective when we want to go and vote and be more informed about voting. So there is just that sense of technology being great because you can reach a lot of people, but also bad that you can reach a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, it comes, you know, there are pros and cons with everything. And so that's just something I wanted to mention about the recent election.
Arguably, this is the most important topic that can be discussed because technology is integrated into all of our lives, and it would not hurt to talk about this continually on different occasions. Michelle and I wrote an essay called Representing Beauty, and the idea of it is now that Facebook, Twitter, etc. exists, we have a disposition toward all phenomenon in reality as a potential tweet or a potential picture or a potential post. Consequently, the very way that we walk in the world and exist in the world changes because everything has the potential of being digitalized. Also, if it's on TV, then it's real. You know, you're not making it big till you're on TV. Our media has become the standard by which we judge the quality of reality rather than reality be the standard by which we judge the quality of our media.
Yes.
We are totally backwards, and this is very dangerous because then it's all about creating an image even if it sacrifices your character.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you have the ability to get online and publish e-books and things like that, this opens doors for lots of artists and a lot of creative people. But when you have these kind of tools, it requires character of a very high caliber, and yet the very nature in a way, of the Facebook and the Twitter, is to enable you not to have to develop character to use it. If the printing press is in the hands of Virginia Woolf, if you're T.S. Eliot or someone, you have to develop some sort of level of skill and disposition before you have access to that. But now you can jump the ship. You can just jump ahead, which gets then into the importance of education to, in a way, teach a etiquette of social media. Mm-hmm. Lastly, and this is an image Michelle and I use in Digressions, a very important essay written by David Foster Wallace called Up Simba, and the idea of this is during the McCain campaign. You can never know when you're talking to McCain versus the politician McCain. You can never know even because he has this beautiful scene of McCain who's crying because of hearing about how a boy has been contacted about by the Bush Republicans during the primaries and Bush has slandered him and McCain's really hurt. And Wallace points out that he can't help but thinking, oh, he's getting a lot of votes for crying. So you can never know nowadays when your politicians are genuine versus when they're trying to get votes. And the way Wallace describes this is there's a black box around them, and you can never get in. There's no exit. And I think that increases cynicism, that increases our distrust of politics today, and creates quite a challenge because in today's world, it's hard to tell the difference between a person and a person's media image. And drawing that line, I think, is a great challenge for all of us today.
There's an ancient movie that was ancient even when I was a child and saw it on black and white television as opposed to when it was out in the theater. My wife often says, well, I won't say what she says about that, but just because I saw something on television doesn't mean I was in black and white, doesn't mean I'm ancient. But the movie was called The Seventh Veil. I remember it to this day. It is an incredible classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a very old movie. It is in black and white, but it has value. And it is about how the individual hides, one or two veils over it, personality and character from certain people, etc. And finally, there's the seventh veil, and that we never reveal. I don't know, I guess just what Daniel was saying made me think of that, but I just want to stress that the media is the message, is the John McLuhan thing, it's not a new thought, but I've lost my train of thought if someone wants to jump in, but there was something that what Daniel said that just made me say I need to say this because, again, I do media and, I'm television and radio guy for a profession, but I think we need to, I know what it was. I wanted to say I have mixed feelings about Twitter. When I when I first heard about Twitter, 140 characters, are you out of your mind? But I am impressed that a lot can be said in 140 characters. That does not mean I prefer it, but if you think about it, it does make us get to the point, which took me more than a minute to do. The Reasonable Voice is in the studio with me today, our technical support, creative catalyst and spoken word poet, Mr. Vernon Hankins, also video pro, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today and recommending us to all of your friends. This has been The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, hoping you will become one of the voices, reasonable voices, heard round the world.
But don't go away. We're going to continue this conversation about politics in the midst of, again, so much political gamesmanship going on in Washington, especially about health care. We, the panel at The Reasonable Voices, are going to be right back after another commercial break from our poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins.
Pop up from below my window and catch a glimpse when the curtain's pulled. I'm not looking for privacy. I want your eyes to see all of my personal. View my program in its entirety. Even sit through and watch all my commercials. No need for apologies as you follow me to my favorite restaurant. I just want you to haunt me so I can't go out in public, but publish me in your publication with special font. My career has been uneventful without your flash and shutter sound. Yell for my attention for a photo op. I need that that noise and all the buzz that surrounds. I'm not trying to be a household name. I can do without the fame and the crowd. I only care if it's to you that my name is renowned. Capture me on the film of your mind. See me with the eyes of your lens. Blog about me, talk about me. Make me impressive in your press when you gossip to your friends. Just ask, I'll give you a press pass. No, just trespass. You don't need permission to be on my property. I just want to know. I just want to feel like there's always somebody watching me. And write whatever article you like, but I just want you to share my story. I'll take the negative with the positive press, because I know it comes with the territory. And I could deal with all the front page coverage, just so as long as I had you with me. Because everybody knows that the only thing worse than bad publicity is not having publicity.
Welcome back. I'm Marcello Rolando, your host of The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and this is part two of a discussion we've started before about politics and the social media, multimedia, image making, Madison Avenue, political ads, and hey, when was the last time you saw Speaker Boehner cry in public after everybody started making fun of his crying? How could he shut it off so easily if it was sincere? So we're back to talking about elections and media and how we respond to both. Recently, in 2013, there were elections, especially, well, lots of places, New Jersey and Virginia being top on our mind, including Charlottesville City Council going Democratic completely. Not a big surprise, but a big shift. In our studios today, the reasonable voices are Mr. Bernard Hankins. We know all about Bernard Hankins and Daniel L. Gunner and Michelle Upperman, one of my favorites of the three. And so here we go, ladies and gents, part two, politics, social media, multimedia, what is it?
All right, so three stories. You have Anthony Weiner. Recently, you have the people who dressed up like Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman for Halloween, and then you have a person who dressed up like a Boston bomb victim from Halloween. So you have three different kinds of people, not all of them, obviously not all of them political, posting these things, I don't know why, on Facebook, knowing that they're going out to the world, knowing that employers now...
How about the scoutmaster who shoved over the stone, what was it?
The stone,
yeah, millions of years old, and he posted on Facebook. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear about that one. But, so it's interesting what, we were talking about the pros and cons, what social media and media has allowed for us to do, but also the detriment of it. You have to be very careful with what you put out there now. And then it makes me also think of, you know, the kind of blurred lines that happens in reality TV. I'm always amazed when I see a reality TV show and people are just still doing what they, I mean, even if some of it's scripted, but I'm just like, Do people really become that unaware of the camera? They say, oh, yeah, you get used to it after a while. I'm just like, I don't... Maybe because I shoot video, I'm always aware of the camera because it's in my hand.
Yes.
But I feel like if there was a camera around, I'd be very aware of what I'm doing.
Well, politicians aren't. I mean, or they wouldn't say half the things they say. I used to say, which is now such an old-fashioned statement, video is forever. Remember that.
Uh-huh.
Well, now it's more than video. I mean, you know, it's everything is forever.
That's a good threat.
Michelle.
Oh, well... I think the idea of media being used in politics and the fact that we have all, you know, you were mentioning Twitter before and about the 140 characters, and you were saying how that's not a lot of space, but you can also get to the point with Twitter. But, you know, Daniel brought up our paper on representing beauty and about how everything can be like a post, a tweet. You can, you have the ability and almost the authority, in a sense, to make a statement. And I thought, like, recently, this doesn't have to do directly with politics, but it has to do with Miley Cyrus's VMA performance. And, you know, everyone saw her performance, and it was just outlandish, and then people posted on Facebook about it, and I, you know, honestly, I didn't really want to see or know about her performance, but it's almost like I had no choice but to see it, read about it, hear about it, have it be go viral, and, you know, I think that's the response, you know, the responsibility of social media is to know how to handle things like a outlandish VMA performance, but not to not to feed it by posting even a negative comment about it. So, I mean, that was something that I thought was very indicative of our current situation with media.
But now everybody knows who she is, and she's worth millions. Unfortunately, in our culture today, you have every incentive to be outlandish and extreme, and this has major implications in politics, because every single negotiation, debt seal conversation has to be the season finale on AMC after Breaking Bad. Because if it's not as stimulating and as entertaining, then it's not real to us, because we're perpetually surrounded by overstimulation. So consequently, negotiations about the debt have to put the very credit rating, stability of the United States of America in jeopardy every single time in order for the American people to care and for the voting base of a particular party to agree. I think, too, that we have become, as a culture, almost schizophrenic. We go from highs to lows very, very quickly. Obama says one thing, we love him, the next day he says something human, we hate him, and then he says something, and it goes up and down, up and down. I mean, Bush had approval ratings in the 37s. Obama has them now in the 37s. I mean, no politician, I think, in our media world today can survive. Congress is at negative 2 percent approval. I mean, but who watches C-SPAN? How does anyone know how good they are? Nobody actually gets on C-SPAN regularly and watches to go, you know what, Congress is about I approve them 60%. No, they just read headlines, Twitter, and Facebook, and they say, yeah, it's cool to hate Congress, so let's all hate them. And it's this emotionalism that is wrapped up in our media, of which, to go back to the first point, those who are in the game have every incentive to push it to the extreme.
Of course.
And that makes our society extremely volatile, and in that volatility, we become increasingly hostile toward one another.
Well, to say media has become irresponsible and has blurred reporting with showbiz is putting it mildly. As a person who's in showbiz and the media, I make the distinction, and I'm upset when people, when either profession does not. But I now remember what I wanted to, that Michelle made me think of in part one. Back to the election, I did actually see, as a reporter, I was invited to a mental health forum in Henrico, Virginia, is that how you pronounce it? And the guest speakers, were then candidates Ken Cuccinelli, Republican candidate for Virginia governor, and Terry McAuliffe, Democratic, now governor-elect of Virginia. And it was a toss of a coin, probably, who would go first. But it was not a debate. I'm curious of what you think about the value. Again, like Twitter, there are pros and cons. The idea was they had been given the questions by the moderator ahead of time, nor were they on the stage at the same time. All the heads are already shaking no, just so you know. Nor were they on the stage at the same time. So they knew the questions. They were able to give prepared answers. Well thought out, maybe? No? Okay. But there was no exchange because they were not on at the same time. And perhaps a good note, each answer had to be limited to 2 minutes or something. That was what I was sent there to cover, or that is what would happen, and I covered it. I have seen the responses in the studio, but I'll let you hear them now.
Well, I don't know if that's exclusively related to media and social media. I think that's politics in general, where everything is tailor-made. You can't only say this. But I think that marries perfectly with media, because it's like, oh, we only have so many seconds to say this? Great. Soundbite. Right. But when you're talking, it makes me think of best show on TV right now, The Newsroom.
Absolutely the best.
And not just because of, because of just the writing, the cinematography, the music, the acting. It's funny. But one of the best episodes, I think, was when the newsroom crew wanted to have they were trying to get the Republican debate to be held by them.
Yeah, so yeah.
They practiced for like a month pretending to be all the candidates based upon all of the things and speeches that they heard. And they were like, but we're going to have a real debate. I get to ask them whatever I want, and you can't deny my question. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was in charge of the debate was like, this is embarrassing. We're not going to let this happen. His partner was like, no, these people should be forced to answer these questions. These are not difficult questions. He's like, this is just common sense stuff. And then they end the whole episode with, I guess, actual clip. It was like, Senator Bachman, Elvis or Johnny Cash? And he's like, oh, I'm an Elvis person, just showing the ridiculousness, when you juxtapose those two things together.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I brought this up before, but, you know, I just think about, you know, some of our great presidents in the past and you know, in the present and, you know, hopefully in the future. But, I mean, the past shows a lot of what it used to be to see people debating, to see people really having discussions and really having... And I think, you know, it's funny, we had a conversation on community college, and I'll just bring this up just because I think it relates. But, you know, something... UVA, you know, the university started by Jefferson, was for, you know, people who were pursuing different fields of study. And the fact that they would brush shoulders, the fact that they would be sharing spaces, exactly. sharing gardens, yes. sharing a library, they're all fairly close to one another. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is something really, you know, I see something beautiful in that ability to know one another and to really be willing to take the time to sit and talk with one another and to have conversations and to not have time limits on things. But I think actually that's extremely important, maybe if not even more important in politics, to have that the ability to have time, the ability to know who you're dealing with, to know the person's character. But that's the challenge, though, in a growing world, which is great that it's growing, but how do you know, still have... Well, anyways, that's another topic on, you know, state government or federal government, you know. But I think that in politics, it's absolutely necessary for real discussions to happen, for us to know what decisions to make. And often we need to make hard decisions, but in a world where it's all about convenience, it's not, nobody's really going to just be apt to make the hard decisions when it comes to what they really need to decide and what they really need to do. So that's just something I wanted to throw out there. Daniel?
The original, if I'm not mistaken, debates originally emerged from Socratic dialogues. Socratic dialogues start with Socrates spending a long time just defining words, and they go on for a long time, and you have to really work for the answers. Lincoln Douglas debates were known to go 6 to 8 hours. The debates today are not debates, they're commercials. And I am very worried about the idea of saying you've got 30 seconds to give it an answer, 2 minutes, because it gives the American people an idea that remarkably complex issues like the economy and military and et cetera can be understood in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. When in fact, they take years to get any sort of grasp on. So I think our debates give us a false sense of understanding, which then increases our arrogance, then increases self-righteousness, lowers humility, lowers listening to one another because we think we understand. It gives us a false sense of competence. I will also say that a debate is not about winning, it's about finding the solution to the problem.
Yeah.
The structure of the debate is to win. And if you win, it's like the idea of education today is to get an A. You get an A, you did well. It doesn't matter if you don't know anything about Hamlet, you got an A. Likewise, our debate, if you win, it doesn't matter if your solution actually will solve the economic crisis. You won. Who cares? And I think that, too, gives them the American people a perception that these issues, of which have very serious consequences, it doesn't matter if we find the solution. It just matters if you win. And then one day we wake up and suddenly it does matter and it's too late.
Yeah. You know, I have to say I have a not surprisingly, a pro and con, both position on that. I think, number one, the American public has to accept some responsibility for accepting 2-minute answers on important questions.
Sure.
However, they're not the ones who are in control of the media. They can turn it off, that's for sure, but so we can't lay it all at the feet of the public. But the other side of the coin is I just wonder. I always say that I'll leave out my political party's adjectives that I usually include in this, but the American people are not as dumb as certain political leaders need them to be.
I agree.
And I think they proved that in this recent election because something that, for all of the talk on media, I don't think anyone ever actually came out and said that there are millions of Americans who do understand more than 2-minute answers and who do understand the nuance of making choices and not just a single issue voter, because in a blue state, I hate it when we have to do that, but in a blue state, a Republican, who, by the way, is not a moderate Republican. He is anti-many social issues, but that's not the point. He saved his state when they needed him, and they voted for him. And by the same token, there were millions of Americans in the Commonwealth of Virginia who said, one of the things I didn't mention about being a reporter on that scene, because I have to be objective when I'm a reporter, is that I didn't go into that situation, the mental health forum, liking either candidate. I wouldn't have voted for either one of them. But once I heard them speak, even though it was not a debate, there they were. I'm watching them, and I had the benefit of camera, which helps too. I made up my mind at that instant. I just think Americans are more capable. I know they are. They are more capable. I mean, we've got some fringes, I know, on both sides, but they are more capable than what the media is giving them. They are more capable, and if we gave them more, just like any student, if you ask more of a student, they generally come up with more. But if you don't, then, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about something that we had talked about in part one, which was when you brought up how the news cycle became this constant thing. And it got me thinking about of a lot of things, and one of them being, I think the news can do that because there's this nobility about it. You know, this is truth. This is reality. So, of course, it should be on TV at all times. Hmm. You know, you can't really argue with, we're bringing you objective things about life. This is not just fluff programming, your sitcom. Hmm. This is reality. So you need to be watching it constantly. But then it also gets me thinking about this sort of human hunger. And because I have to ask myself, what kind of person sits back and watches some like bomb go off and says, Yeah. You know, like it's a boardroom meeting, and then we'll package that, and then we'll play it, and like.
But that's what they do.
which is mind blowing.
Oh yeah.
But it makes me think about, you know, it's like when you go to the movies now, there's such a high tolerance that we've developed for like explosions and like explicit graphic scenes of violence and sex that you have to start then taking the ante up even more in order to get people's attention. So to me, that's what I feel like the news often does. It's so real and raw that it's almost as if people are saying, when I show people this, it's going to get their attention because this is even more graphic than the movies.
Exactly.
That's true.
So I feel like there's a reason why people keep tuning into, or people keep reporting on such like raw images, because there's something that we're not getting somewhere else, you know? we've exhausted watching movies even to the point of the artistic that's supposed to feed our soul. We can't even do that anymore. So now we have to transfer to reality and say, okay, feed me over here, but we're not like feeding ourselves positive images.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, to that, I think the news has a pressure to be more like movies, and that's frightening. I think, to Marcello's point, if you ask the average American, they're going to say they think the debate structure is ridiculous. They're going to say politics is ridiculous. But I don't want to be cynical, but there is a dimension in which people know what they're supposed to say, and they know what they're supposed to be against. When it comes to actually living their lives, they continue to feed that fire. Nobody thinks that they don't think for themselves. Nobody thinks that they're not objective when it comes to politics. Nobody thinks that they don't truly listen. The challenge is to have the humility to truly ask, am I someone who's objective or am I not? Because that will open you up to receiving truth that you otherwise wouldn't have ever received.
We're going to have to jump in on that one. It's been another great discussion, part two. This is the Reasonable Voice, the Reasonable Voices in the studio with me today, our technical support, creative catalyst, and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo, I love that word, and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today and recommending us to all your friends. This has been The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, hoping that you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.
No strings attached, no looking back. A new man is what you looking at, giving up everything.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough raps. Yo, where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddled. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle, so they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise a debt ceiling.
Oh.